best of the holiday season to you. Good afternoon. After a little bit of a delay, it is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuka in the house, Ezra Ginsberg as well, Jesse the intern, producer Tim. I'm Matt Leibel filling in for Drew Mandel, who is on vacation as well, along with Richard Pollock. Not on vacation together. That would never happen. They're just both on vacation. So your lineup today, Matt, Dave, and Ezzy. As I mentioned, Jesse the intern and producer Tim in the house. 3 hours, well, just under 3 hours of hockey talk. Thanks a lot, World Juniors. Thanks a lot, Jake Patterson.
What a finish, though.
Yeah. If you, in case you're just joining us, you don't know what happened in the game. Czech Republic wins 5-4 in a shootout over Team Canada. Could have some interesting implications for what that means for Canada in the going into the medal round of the World Juniors. Of course, they still got to get there. They got a big game against the United States coming up in a couple of days. We'll cover that and much more. Guests on the show today include Adam Kimmelman, NHL.com Deputy Managing Editor. He's coming up in 15 minutes. At the top of hour number two, we'll have Jonas Siegel, our colleague from TSN 1050 in Toronto, who covers the Leafs. A lot of questions about the Leafs and other hockey-related questions for Jonas. And then the bottom of hour number two, Drew Spivak, who covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com, will be our guest. Of course, the Jets on their way to Colorado as we speak. They had a practice this morning. They're on their way to Denver for a game against Colorado tomorrow night. And we'll talk to Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com about that. Those are the guests. I want to welcome in the guys. We're going to talk about last night's Jets game in just a second, but it's a great honor to be hosting the Illegal Curve, my second time in the last couple of years hosting, and I'm excited to be here with you guys. Ezzy and Dave, how are you guys?
Yeah, Maddie, it's good to have you back. Drew, Richie, Remus, everybody decided to go to, you know, the southern U.S., California, Kentucky. But, you know, we bring our sharpshooter, you know, from the bullpen in.
No, come on.
And we're happy to have you back because there's lots to talk about. Big Jets win, World Juniors, Spengler Cup. Dave's back for another week. Let's go. I'm ready to go here.
It's always a good show when Dave Minuk is involved with the Legal Curve. I've always said that it never happens enough. The man behind the scenes.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Matt. It's, you know, you and I have some good chemistry. We've worked well together. We did form line two or the B line or whatever we called
ourselves
this summer. So no, we've had a lot of fun, and we're gonna have we might not have a full show today, but it's gonna be a full show. Exactly.
See, that's why he deserves to be on air more often. I think my point was just made right there, was it not?
Well, Maddie, to this day, Dave gets the most love mail, if you want to call it that, love letters to our Illegal Curve mailbox. Even though he's only on every once in a while, I'd say, you know, once a month, something like that. But Dave gets a lot of you know, love mail and
for the record,
female variety.
For the record, they're all written by Ezra, but I appreciate them nonetheless.
You know, guys, I've been away. I was in Southern Ontario this past week, and I flew in actually last night. But the timing couldn't have worked out better. I was in Kingston during the day, took a short flight to Toronto, and had a little bit of a layover. So I caught almost the entire Jets game on my little Bell Media iPhone app, listening on TSN1290.ca, I believe is what the feed is. And I get off the plane in Toronto. I'm getting settled. I throw on the game. I think they're about 3 minutes in. And in the next 3 minutes, there were like, I don't know, 8, 9 goals. I couldn't believe it was happening. When I turned on the game, the Jets had literally just scored to make it 2-1. By the end of the first period, it was 4-3 for the Jets. Obviously, it ended up in a 6-4 win. Basically, would have been a 5-4 win, right? There was an Enstrom empty netter at the end. Let's start with the beginning of the game. What do you make of the frantic pace? Wasn't this supposed to be a classic Western Conference low-scoring affair between the Jets and the Wild? Every game so far between the two of them decided by one goal. And here the guys are out of control right off the top.
Right. You mentioned the first three games were all low-scoring games, and the Minnesota Wild have had trouble scoring goals as of late. I think going into the game, they were averaging just over one goal a game, and they're actually the second lowest-ranked scoring team in the NHL. But, Matty, you mentioned the first period there, and in just under 5 minutes, you had 5 goals scored there. And to me, it really looked like the Winnipeg Jets' game plan was not to play down to the Minnesota Wild style. And when I say play down, I don't mean that the Minnesota Wild is an inferior opponent, but the Minnesota Wild are a team that relies heavily on goaltending, their defense, keeping games low scoring. But the Winnipeg Jets, I felt, dictated the pace of that game, and they got the Minnesota Wild out of their usual system and structure, and it worked to their benefit. I thought the Jets were by far the most physical team out of the two. The hits were way disproportionate, Dave, and I thought that the Winnipeg Jets were engaged engaged, and I thought Evander Kane's line, again, with Scheifele and Frolik, was the best line on the ice. Sure, you know, the Wild are missing Zach Parise, but, you know, the Jets have injuries themselves. And I thought they opened up the game, and, you know, they didn't fall into that trap. And we know that Minnesota Wild likes to play the trap, even though it's a little bit different than the Jacques Lemaire days. But they opened up the game, and they basically were taking advantage of a team that struggled. Guys, the Wild has not been very good. The Wild have not been good, I should say, over the last month. They've fallen down the standings. They're struggling to score goals. With the exception of Pominville, Koivu, and Coyle, they're not really getting much secondary scoring. And the Jets took advantage of a goalie in Backstrom who really hasn't recovered from that injury. His numbers are awful this year. So it was an impressive win. It's only their fourth Central Division win of the year, which they need. They need to go on a run here. We all know that. So it was a positive step, and hopefully they can build on that again in Colorado.
You know what? It was interesting because, first of all, the game was fascinating because, you know, you didn't – before the game even begun, Ezzie and I were talking about it, and he said, you know, expecting a 2-1 game. You know, that's the kind of style Minnesota plays. And, you know, generally the Jets adapt to the style of the team they're playing against. So you're anticipating that they're going to play that sort of kind of a low-scoring, tight-checking game. And then, you know, right off the hop, and Maddie, as you said, the score was, you know, 3-2. And suddenly you're like, where did this come from? Like, we turned around and it was 3-2. Like, obviously, and that was, according to Michael Russo, who's the beat writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, that was the quickest two goals in Minnesota Wild history. They scored in 10 seconds. So, I mean, it was that quick. You literally couldn't sit down before another goal was scored. So it was just a really interesting game. It was the hitting, and you know, what's interesting also is that the hitting didn't take place really till Peluso threw a big check against the boards. Kind of got it started, kind of set the tenor for the rest of the game. And as Ez said, the Jets were more physical than the Wild. And really, the goaltending wasn't the best on either end, really, because as bad as Pavlik was, Backstrom wasn't any better. He let in, I think, 4 goals on his first 8 shots. So, I mean, we're not talking about a guy who was – and he was fighting the puck. He did make some nice saves. He had a couple of really nice ones on saves on Scheifele on nice setups by Kane. But overall, it wasn't a stellar goaltending performance.
It wasn't stellar goaltending. And look at the goals that were scored as well. Wheeler's goal was just a garbage goal in front of the net. He's poking at the puck in front of the net.
He had two last night.
Two goals.
So you're talking about the second one? The game winner, the eventual winner?
The eventual game winner. Bufflin's goal, he fans on a shot and kind of just follows through on it and kind of, you know, pokes it in. I mean,
Fontaine's goal too.
Exactly.
Remember?
Fontaine's goal was kind of a goal that Pavlik could have had, and that led to him being pulled. But, you know, that's the type of goals that a team like the Jets need. They're not going to always get a beautiful tic-tac-toe play from Ladd, Little, and Wheeler. And they got those goals. And I felt like they wanted that game more. I thought the intensity level was good. And I know, you know, that's sometimes overrated about the compete level and the intensity level. But let's be honest, guys. A lot of times the Jets' intensity level has been lacking. If you want to look at the Edmonton game or other games in the past where you're questioning whether they were up for the game, and that wasn't a question last night.
Let's talk about, there was an interesting moment. You talked about Andre Pavlik getting pulled, Dave, and he obviously had an interesting moment that we'll talk about in just a second. We've actually got some audio from Andre Pavlik from this morning from practice before the Jets left for Colorado. But the game settled down. Minnesota scored early in the second to make it 4-4. Then you had basically a scoreless rest of the second period, and then the Jets got 2 goals. One was an empty netter late in the third, and then that Wheeler goal, the winner that you just talked about, as in the third. The second and third periods, I think, looked much more like we expected this game to be for the majority. Was this a case, gentlemen, of a couple days off for Christmas, a little bit loose, both sides coming back, and then after about a period and a bit, they kind of settled into their rhythm? Or is there a little bit more to it here, Ez?
I think there is something to it because the game, I think when after the Christmas break, you're either going to see two types of hockey games. You're going to see a game where there just isn't any cohesiveness on the ice, and you're going to see a low-scoring snore fest, or you're going to see a high-scoring game where it seems like everything goes in like last night, even though there was actually some good goaltending, if you can believe that, in the game, despite there being 10 goals, one of which was an empty netter. But I found it interesting that after the game, Mike Yao was asked that, you know, was the 3-day break a factor, you know, in your team's play in the first period? He said yes, and then Noel also said that it was an advantage. So it's one of those things, like, it can be an advantage or a disadvantage depending on if you won or lost, right? Because that game in the first period really was back and forth and could have gone either way. The Jets were the better team after, I thought, and they really shut down defensively and played better. I was telling Dave that I actually thought the defense pairings, let's not forget that Mark Stewart and Zach Bogosian both out, but will be back tomorrow night, we've been told, from the morning skate today at the MTS Center. But those guys are out. Julian Melchiori, I thought, was actually pretty good in his first NHL game. He didn't play that much, but he was pretty good. And Keaton Ellerbe, after the giveaway in the first period, I thought he settled down with Buff, and Ellerbe and Bufflin actually formed a pretty good defensive pairing. So I think it does factor in, because when you go home and you spend time with your family and you're not practicing, you take your mind off of it, then you get back into it, there is going to be an adjustment period. But it works both ways for both teams. You can either use it as an excuse, or you can just look at it like each team has that break and they have to deal with the same type of factors.
Across the NHL, there were 10 games last night, and in all but two of them, there were over 5 goals in every game. So, I mean, you can see that the break clearly has an impact. And whether there's an advantage to the home team or not, I don't know. But, like, it's just the game, like Maddie said, the game was not, that first period was not a typical Jets. And I asked Evander Kane after the game, I said, "No, Evander, do you think they game plan for that, for you?" I said, "Did you game plan for the Wild like that?" He goes, "No, but they probably didn't game plan for us either like this." So it's interesting. I don't think either team really anticipated that sort of style of game, but that's what we got. And you know what? Let's be realistic. 15,004 fans loved that game last night. The excitement level at the MTS Center was through the roof.
Now, Jets going to be playing in Colorado tomorrow night against the Avalanche on the road. Another Central Division game, as you mentioned. Their record as so far in the division has been awful. You mentioned Mark Stewart and Zach Bogosian both out for last night's game, but both expected to be in. We heard from Claude Noel after the morning skate this morning that they're going to be game-time decisions, but he expects them to play. The other interesting news that came out of this morning is that Al Montoya is going to get the start in net tomorrow night. Now, we'll have to talk about Pavlik's meltdown. We have a little audio we can play from Pavlik. So Pavlik not getting the start tomorrow night, asked about getting pulled in last night's game. Here's a few minutes from Andre Pavlik earlier this morning at Jets Morning Skate.
Huh? How are you feeling the day after last night?
New day, new practice. Good practice. So tomorrow's not a day.
Was the root of the frustration last night getting yanked? Was it something deeper than that? What was it?
Yeah, the frustration to get the pulled, that's for sure, after the Edmonton game, and it was 3-2. So, you know, disappointing. It's frustration. But like I said, today's a new day. New day tomorrow, so pretty much it.
Coach said it was more about sparking the team than it was about your play. Did he say the same things to you?
Yeah, he said pretty much the same thing. Yeah, what he said to the media.
Is that what you saw it too?
Well, of course, I don't like to get the pulled. That's, especially when it's a 3-2, you know. And especially the way we play the last few games. So, but I don't like it. That's a coach's decision. Nothing what he can do about it.
Were those goals you felt you should have had, or was it more of a team thing? Or
I said so many times, it's every goal you can have it. But it was a tough one, you know. We had a bad start. They came to us hard and couldn't make a save. So
you want to get back in there tomorrow night? What's that? You want to get back in there as soon as possible?
Well, I don't think so. That's going to happen.
No?
Well, we'll see. I don't know.
Find any comfort in seeing that the maneuver worked? You know, they potted a couple of goals to finish the period.
Well, it was good for us. We scored some goals in the first. We were up one goal after first, so I guess that message worked.
Are you doing anything to work on your game? Like, are you doing anything extra?
Oh, well, good practice today. We've been practicing for a long time, so it was good to be on the ice, see some shots. You know, it's about a lot of details, and so I got things to work on, that's for sure. And we'll see how things are going to go. It's, you know, it's a rough time. I have to go, have to battle through it and stay strong.
Sometimes it's good for leaders on a team to show emotion and, you know, show the rest of the guys that you do care, that you are fighting through something.
Well, if you don't have emotion, it's something wrong with you, I think, and you know, first of all, I didn't know anybody see me, so it was just for me. It was, you know, sometimes enough it's enough, and what happened last night. So, you know, we're behind me. It's behind me. I don't think it's about like just to show somebody emotion. It's just the way I am, and you know, I try to stay down, stay calm, but sometimes it's enough, and that what happened last night.
Did it feel good to break something last night?
No, it didn't feel good at all. No. Okay. Yeah. Certainly not.
Thanks.
Winnipeg Jets goalie Andre Pavlik from the morning skate this morning. Did it feel good to break something?
That was a great question from Tim Campbell.
I'm pretty sure
that was Tim Campbell there from the Free Press.
In reference, of course, gentlemen, Ezzy and Dave, to Pavlik going down the tunnel after being pulled. 3 goals on 6 shots in the first period. He gets yanked, and he just absolutely took his frustration out. We're not used to seeing any kind of emotion from Andre Pavlik. He's a pretty straight-laced kind of guy for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part, but he does show emotion. I mean, he will show emotion on the ice in the sense that maybe we haven't seen him break a stick on the bench or throw that level of tantrum, but he's the type of guy that does show frustration and gets down on himself. I want to say this right now, because Dave and I have been talking about this since last night. Only one of those goals, you could say, was really Pavlik's fault. And Pavlik has struggled big time over the last month, and his numbers haven't been good. But I like to see that emotion from Pavlik. There's nothing wrong with that. And Al Montoya is going to get the start against Colorado tomorrow night. But Andre Pavlik is still the number one goalie of this team. And we were talking about this before the show started, when we were waiting for the junior game to end. You know, Montoya deserves some starts here. But for Pavlik to get mad that he's pulled from the game, that's what you want to see. You don't want to see your goalie just, oh, okay, I guess I'll sit on the bench now. He's frustrated, guys. Pavlik, his season is not going the way he wants it to go, and he's showing emotion. And, you know, after the interview, you know, this morning, and Montoya was saying that, you know, he was happy to come in and he did a good job. But I like that. I like to see emotion out of all of the players. And, you know, again, I really think Pavlik is taking this hard, and he should be. He isn't playing to the level that he can play. So I have no problem with it.
Head coach Claude Noel said a lot of the same sort of stuff, Ezra, this morning, that this isn't punishment for Pavlik. You imagine it's probably just to give him a chance to clear his head. We know he's an emotional guy, and it gives him an opportunity to take the night off and cool off. And a lot of people have been pulling for Montoya to get more starts, too. So that's what's going to happen tomorrow night against the Avalanche. You mentioned the junior game, Ezra. We're going to switch gears when we come back. Talk about the World Junior Tournament. Canada losing to the Czech Republic 5-4 in a shootout earlier this morning. Our guest will be NHL.com's Deputy Managing Editor Adam Kittleman. Kim Moment. That's right. To talk about the World Juniors when we come back. Ezra, Dave, and Matt in on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Actually, a change of lineup today for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the last show of 2013. Ezra Ginsberg is in the house, so is Dave Minuk, and I'm Matt Leibel, your host. Dave and I filling in for Drew and Richie. You get to be Drew, Dave. I'll be Richie.
I don't think so. Never.
Fair enough. We're about to jump on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline in just a second. It is a blustery, awful day in Winnipeg right now. If you're on the roads, please take some extra time. Enjoy the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in your car. Slow down. Be safe. If you're thinking of heading out of the city, Trans-Canada Highway closed east and west out of the city, so maybe make some new plans. It's snowing. We got blowing snow. Temperature continuing to drop through the day. If you can avoid the roads, do that. We'll keep you updated on the weather, because that's going to be an interesting story, as well as all the sports and hockey that we're talking about today on Illegal Curve. Of course, any parts of the show you miss, check out the podcast, illegalcurve.com. If you're listening live online, tsn1290.ca, we thank you for that. You'll be able to listen to any part of the show, as I mentioned, on the podcast, and hit us up on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, throughout the show. We now are going to flip to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Adam Kimmelman, frequent guest of this show, is the Deputy Managing Editor for NHL.com, and he's going to allow us to talk a little World Junior Hockey right now in this segment on Illegal Curve. Adam, thanks for joining us. Obviously, earlier this morning, a 5-4 shootout loss for Team Canada, the Czech Republic. What's been your impression of Team Canada 2 games in to this tournament? And what do you think their chances are so far ending their gold medal drought this year?
I think they're still pretty high. I think they just, you know, I like the way, it was more what the Czechs did than what Canada didn't do. I think the Czechs came in with a real solid defensive game plan. I mean, you look at the final score, 9 goals, and you might not think that. But for large stretches of the game, Canada really had trouble, you know, moving the puck through the offensive zone. It seemed like Canada's game plan was just clog the middle of their zone and eliminate those side-to-side passes that Canada had working so well in their opener against Germany. And for a lot of the game, you know, there were a lot of tipped passes, a lot of blocked shots in most of that game, and then things got a little squirrely there late. But I think it was more what the Czechs did than what Canada didn't do. I still think they're going to be, you know, in the running for the gold medal. I don't think today's loss really changes a whole lot. They're still, it's not like they're going to completely fall apart here and you know, end up, you know, playing for relegation or finish anywhere other than first or second in the group. I still think they're in good shape. I think they're okay. I don't think anybody needs to worry about too much.
Adam, we just heard the game on this station, Canada losing 5-4 to the Czech Republic in a shootout. Who's your sleeper team to look out for in this tournament?
You know, I said it last year, and I kind of got burned by them, Finland. But I still think this year, you know, I got a chance to see most of what they have here in Sweden over the summer in Lake Placid, and I thought they were very impressive then, and nothing's really changed to change my opinion. I mean, they don't have Kasperi Kapanen, who was probably going to be one of their top forwards, but Tuukka Teravainen and Artturi Laukkanen still makes a real outstanding top line. I think they're real solid in net with Juuse Saros. I'm a big Rasmus Ristolainen fan. I think he's a great guy to have anchoring your defense. I think if any team is going to, you know, outside of Canada, U.S., you know, or Russia or Sweden, I think Finland could jump in there and really surprise some people.
Adam, Sam Reinhardt or Aaron Ekblad, who would you take first overall and why?
Oh, without a doubt, Sam Reinhardt. I think just there's nothing he does that's going to make you jump out of your seat and go, oh my goodness, but there's not a thing he doesn't do extremely well. Face-offs, playing on off, you know, playing offensively, playing defensively. You saw Brent Sutter use him, you know, killing penalties. He's just so smart. Hockey IQ off the charts. There's nothing and no role that he can't play and play well. And, you know, whether he's playing the middle, whether he's playing the wing, you know, he just, to me, he's the best player available for this year's draft. I was really impressed in parts with Ekblad's game today and the other day against Germany. I thought he played okay. I thought he was very good in spurts. I thought he was, you know, not so good in others. I think there's some consistency that maybe he needs to find in his game. But to me, it's Reinhardt all day.
Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor, NHL.com, talking World Junior Hockey with us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Adam, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the two Winnipeg Jets prospects playing on Team Canada in the tournament, Nick Petan and Josh Morrissey. How would you rate their play so far through two games?
I think they've been good. I think Petan, you know, has found a nice little niche for himself in the middle of that. I guess you can call that the second line. It's tough to differentiate with that, with, you know, as stacked as Canada is at forward. But I thought he's done well, and I think Morrissey's done a nice job just moving the puck, creating offense. You know, I think it's hard when you take those guys because they're used to being top line guys, top pair defensemen in Morrissey's case, and you're maybe making them play not quite the same role they would have had on their team. So they're still finding their niche a little bit, but I think they've been pretty good so far. I think the entire team for Canada really has been good. I don't think, you know, they've done anything outstanding, but I don't think anybody, you know, other than Anthony Mantha really, you know, not hustling off the ice for the too many men on the ice penalty in the third period, I really can't, you know, knock any of the Canadian players for anything they've done in the two games.
Adam, the Americans are off to 2-0 start. They beat Slovakia early this morning. I wasn't up for that game. I was catching a couple Z's, but I'm told they played very well. How does this team differ from last year, and do you think that this American team can repeat and win another gold medal this year?
Absolutely. I think they're definitely in the running for a gold medal. I think the big difference is, you know, they have to create more offense from their top nine forwards, and they've really done a nice job of that this year. Last year, they were really able to rely on, you know, Seth Jones and Jacob Trouba to really facilitate the offense from the blue line, and they don't have that this year. And I think they've done a really good job, you know, with the top three lines, really doing that, creating offense. You know, Riley Barber's been very good. You know, that line with Dan O'Regan and Riley Barber and Nick Cardiels has done a nice job creating offense, but it seems like it's kind of been spread around a little bit, and they've done a nice job, you know, finding different guys at different times to step up. And there's really been a very limited drop-off in goal from John Gibson to John Gillies this year. I think Gillies, you know, it's a little bit of a different look. He's a lot bigger, you know, maybe a little bit more athletic than Gibson was. Certainly covers a lot more space at 6'5". But I think they're definitely, you know, going to be a force to be reckoned with. Again, they're not going to, you know, have one dominant line that's going to, you know, you have to key on. I think it's a very workmanlike group. I think it's a very blue-collar group. I think you saw that today against Slovakia. You know, I think they got 6 goals from 6 different guys. So, you know, that's what they're going to have to do if they want to be successful.
Sticking with Team USA, another prospect that Jets fans are going to be interested in is Andrew Kopp. How has he played so far in this tournament, and what do you think his ceiling is in the NHL?
Kopp's been very good. I think that line with Kopp, Adam Ernie, and Hudson Fashing has started. I think they've started all 6 periods in the 2 games. You know, that's a line that U.S. coach Don Lucia has really taken a liking to, just because of the way that all 3 guys can skate. All 3 guys are real heavy, heavy forecheckers, and they can create offense. With Kopp, I think he looks to be like a prototypical second line, third line center. Just a big, big body who can lead your forecheck and just be hard on the puck and be a guy that, you know, other teams really don't want to get near when he gets ahead of steam going.
Talking World Junior Hockey, NHL Deputy Manager, Managing Editor, NHL.com, Adam Kimmelman is our guest here on the Eagle Curve Hockey Show. Columbus Blue Jackets prospect Mark Dano has had a very impressive debut with Slovakia, 2 goals and adding an assist. Are hockey fans, Adam, just now finding out how good Dano is?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard for a guy. He plays in Slovakia, in his Slovakian team in the KHL, so he's sort of pretty far under the radar. He's not a giant size guy by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's maybe 6 foot, about 180, 190 pounds. But, you know, you watch him in these couple of games here, just skill to burn, just outstanding player, centering their top line. You know, he's going to be a real nice prospect for Columbus. A lot of people were surprised that, you know, the Blue Jackets maybe, you know, quote-unquote, reached for him with a 27th pick, but you know, so far he's living up to any and all expectations that the Blue Jackets might have had for him.
Adam, what are some of the other players that you're going to be watching, whether they're draft eligible or players that are already drafted? I know Dre Sadel on Germany is a 2014 draft eligible player that's been very impressive. Who else are you going to be keeping an eye on in this tournament?
Well, I want to see, you know, how Reinhardt and Ekblad obviously do as we go forward here, just because, you know, so much of what we watch this tournament for is the 2014 draft. But to me, it's the abundance of guys, underage guys for the 2015 draft. You look at Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel from the U.S. team, you know, the big kid from the Czech Republic, Pavel, and his name, unfortunately, is slipping my mind right now. But there's a real strong amount of 2015 draft prospects, and, you know, to see guys at 16 and 17, you know, not just play roles, but play significant roles on their teams in a tournament that's really geared towards 18 and 19-year-olds. It's very impressive. And you know, I watched a little bit of Jack Eichel this morning for the U.S. team. Just gets up and down the ice so well. You know, scored a real nice goal off the rush on the power play. You know, and you know, in Canada, I'm sure you guys have seen what Connor McDavid can do. But he's wonderful to watch when he gets going. Just so smart and so strong. And just to think that he's got a whole nother year of development to go, and he's going to get bigger and stronger. It bodes well for what we're going to see in the NHL in 2 more years. So to me, I'm real curious to see how those guys, the 2015 guys, do.
Adam, thanks so much for your insight and for taking the time to join us today on the Eagle Curve Hockey Show. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
That's Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com. If you missed any part of that interview, it will be available on our podcast. Check it out, illegalcurve.com, after the show. We'll make sure to load that up. When we come back, we'll begin our first of 3 parts of this show. Gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets mid-season report cards. We'll start with the forwards when we come back. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, Matt Leibel with you. It's the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
Our thanks to Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com, for talking World Juniors with us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in the past segment, the last segment. If you missed any part of that interview, it will be available for download on our podcast after today's show is over later this afternoon. Check out IllegalCurve.com. You can also check out IllegalCurve.com for your daily Winnipeg Jets papers, updated this morning. In case you missed it earlier in the show, Al Montoya going to get the start tomorrow night when the Jets are in Colorado. We're going to talk about the week ahead, including that game, later on. But now, gentlemen, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk with me, Matt Leibel, your host for today on Illegal Curve. We're going to do our first of three parts, mid-season report cards for the Jets. This segment is devoted to the forwards. Now, we can't go player by player. We don't have that kind of time. So we're going to try and go line by line. And bear with us because we understand that with the exception of the top line for the Jets, a lot of these combos are very fluid. And only really in the last 3 weeks to a month have we started to see kind of some solidity in some of these line combinations throughout the lineup. So we'll start with that one line that we've come to know really well for the Winnipeg Jets since they basically moved here. Little Ladd Wheeler. Brian Little centering a line with Andrew Ladd on the left, Blake Wheeler on the right. Ezra Ginsberg at Icy SEG. What kind of rating do you give halfway through the season, 40 games into this season? What do you give the top line for the Jets?
Well, this line has been consistently over the last 3 years, the line that Coach Claude Noel goes to for offense. And Blake Wheeler started off a little bit slow, but Brian Little's been the most consistent forward for the Jets. I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. Brian Little's been excellent this year, and he faced criticism going into his RFA status that he wasn't really truly a number one center. And we can have that, you know, debate another day, but the reality is he fills that role for the Jets. And so, back to the question, as far as the line goes, Blake Wheeler has been on fire lately, scored another 2 goals yesterday, and he's been excellent over the last month. So for me, I mean, if we're giving out a grade just for that line, it's got to be something along the lines of a B+. And it's not far away from being an A because, sure, you know, at times that line has struggled to generate offense, and then you have other lines that are dependent on their opportunities. Which right now, Mark Scheifele, Kane Frolik, the next line that we'll look at, has really been filling in that role nicely as far as being secondary offense. So I think that line has been fairly consistent, with the exception of maybe the Eastern road trip, where other players had to step up and those guys didn't have success. They've been pretty good this season, so I'm going to give them a B+.
Now, the second line, which we'll go to here, you mentioned there, Mark Scheifele at center, Evander Kane on the left, Michael Frolik on the right. That line only really came together in this last month after Evander Kane returned after missing 6 games with injury. Remember, he got knocked out in that Black Friday game in Philadelphia, the early morning start, missed 6 games. He returned, and then instant chemistry with Mark Scheifele and Michael Frolik. Frolik, who I think a lot of people might argue has been the most consistent Jets forward for the entire first half of the season. You can make a claim for that. Dave, what do you think about this line gelling since it has come together?
I think they've been excellent. I think that they've done everything they've been asked to do. They occasionally have defensive lapses that lead to goals, as we saw yesterday, and we've seen a couple times throughout the last, as you said, since they've been put together. However, you've seen the trust in the chemistry that's really built up, and I'll be honest with you, I see these guys a lot. I watch them in practice, and I don't feel that Kane had that trust with Scheifele. He had it with Frolik, but I didn't think he had it with Scheifele initially. But I feel like he has it now. I really see there's a tendency on Evander Kane to shoot first. He's a shoot-first guy generally, but I see now with Scheifele, he has a trust to get him that puck. And we saw it yesterday. There were a couple of excellent opportunities that Evander could have shot. He had the opportunity to shoot, and that's generally his default, is to shoot on net. And instead, he passed it off, set up excellent opportunities for Mark Scheifele. Frolik has been phenomenal this season. I mean, I agree with Ezzy. I think if you're talking about consistency, Brian Little and Michael Frolik have been the two most consistent Jet forwards, period. Because, you know, especially with Frolik, because he wasn't getting the same ice time either that Brian Little was. Wasn't getting first power play time. So, you know, you have that sort of, there's a kind of a, he's a little bit at a disadvantage in the sense because he doesn't get as much ice time. But now that he's been moved up and playing with Frolik, I mean, with Scheifele and Kane, I really see that line gelling. And I if you ask me for a grade, I'd have to give them a B+.
Right, and talking about that line, as Dave mentioned, that two-on-one shorthanded, Frolik and Kane, you can see they work well together. They have that chemistry. That line, which has probably been together for, let's say, 2.5 weeks, I'd give that line an A. But if we're looking at maybe Kane and Scheifele as individuals, I probably wouldn't give them A's because Scheifele really struggled earlier in the season, and I might give him a C-plus on half of the year. Same thing with Kane. Again, Evander Kane, to me, has 40-goal ability. The reason why I'm not giving him a higher grade than C-plus is because I think not only has he been out of the lineup, which obviously you can't hold against him, I think he's struggled with his game, and I think he's struggled to evolve, and we've seen that throughout the year with discipline issues, and he's taken a lot of minor penalties, and he's had problems dealing with that and his line mates. But I think one thing's for sure, guys, now we know what the top two lines are. It's pretty clear that Olli Jokinen at 34, 35 years old, at this stage of his career, he's better suited for a third-line center role. It took Mark Scheifele 25 games to get to the point where he Claude Noel can put him out in a second-line center role. And Scheifele still has a lot of learning to do at 20 years old. That goes without saying. But now we know that if when Matt Halaschuk is in the lineup, it's most likely him. Now it's Chris Thorburn. But we know that Setoguchi, he hasn't fulfilled the role that they expected out of him. And that's why he's on the third line, because Jokinen and Setoguchi, those were second-line staples at the beginning of the year. Now they've been bumped down.
Just before we get to that third line and that fourth line, second half of the season coming here, guys. Jets have played 40 games. Is there really any question that the Kane, Scheifele, Frolik line is at least going to challenge for being the top line on this team? I mean, the young talent, the future here. I know Little, Ladd, Wheeler are locked up, but when you talk about giving that line an A, Ezra, since they've been put together, seeing that they really, there's just so much promise there and potential. I think we know what Little, Ladd, Wheeler are. I think that Kane, Scheifele, and Frolik have shown us that we're not quite sure how far they can go. Is it possible in the second half of this season, this line takes a step and they might be the top line with this team come the season's end?
I don't think that happens, but I think that you start to see them getting maybe a little bit more power play time. You start to see them getting a little bit more even strength time. I don't think that Mark Scheifele, for instance, is able to play the minutes and the role that Brian Little can. I think that he's too young for that because, as we said, he was the third-line center for the first 20 games of the season, essentially, and now he's earned that spot. You got to earn it in the NHL, right? And Michael Frolik, again, you know, you talk about consistent players. As far as two-way players, it's undeniable that Michael Frolik right now is the Jets' best two-way player. And you can see how Scheifele's game has developed, and he's finding a nice role there, centering Frolik and Kane. But as far as the number one line, I think you're still going to see Ladd, Little, Wheeler eat up those major even-strength minutes. But I think as the season progresses, the only way we see this line break up, guys, is if they really start to struggle and they can't generate any offense. But right now, Noel knows that line is going, so he's giving them the ice time. But I still think that's your second line for the time being. But we'll see what happens, right? I mean, if Ladd, Little, and Wheeler go into the doghouse, which they don't tend to do, they'll have a couple games where they're off the score sheet. But usually those guys find their way onto the score sheet. Blake Wheeler, you know, has been on the score sheet almost every game over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So for now, I think that stays as the number one line, and the second line just gets more responsibility from Noel.
Let's talk about the last two groupings here. The third line has become Olli Jokinen with Chris Thorburn on one side and Devin Setoguchi on the other. The fourth line, for basically with Jim Slater out for the entire year, has been James Wright playing alongside. It varies, right? Sometimes it's Anthony Peluso. Sometimes, and we've seen John Albert called
Eric
up from
O'Dell.
The Ice Caps.
Yep.
Eric O'Dell. So it's very fluid with that fourth line. So let's talk about these two lines kind of at the same time. How do you guys feel about lines 3 and 4 for the Jets?
Well, I think Chris Thorburn has done an admirable job. I know everyone that's listened to the show knows how much I love Chris Thorburn, but I think he got an assist last night. Chris Thorburn has been asked to play a larger role on this team with the injuries. You've got Matt Halaschuk out. As you mentioned, Jim Slater has been out for, a couple months now. But you have injuries on this team, and he was being asked to play a second-line left-winger role. And I think Chris Thorburn, for a guy that is a fourth-liner at this stage in his NHL career, has done an excellent job. You know, he does whatever you ask of him. If it's going into the corners, laying his body, he'll drop the gloves. But as far as, you know, that's one aspect of that line, one player on that line. Jokinen and Setoguchi, they've taken a lot of criticism this year. But, you know, Olli Jokinen, again, he's contributed. He was on the score sheet again yesterday. And I think he's been better this year. Now, I think that I have a problem with these bottom two lines in that Noel doesn't seem to have the confidence in them. And to me, that's a concern. And when you're winning, maybe you don't notice it as much. But in games where you're really struggling and you need a goal from a line that isn't top six, and guys, when the playoffs come around, everyone says, oh, they're just third and fourth liners. Well, last year, how many big goals did Brian Bickle score for the Chicago Blackhawks, right? He's a third liner, even a fourth liner. And I think that you still need to roll out four lines. And that's more of a criticism of Claude Noel. But I think if I'm giving a grade, which we are doing here, for the third line, and again, Chris Thorburn, it's not necessarily Thorburn, Jokinen, Setoguchi, but as it stands now, I'll give that line a C+.
You know what? It's interesting. You look at those guys as individuals, and you want to give them an individual grade because they've done things well. Like, I agree with Ezzy. I'm not anti-Chris Thorburn. I think Chris Thorburn does.
No, in fact, we're probably more Chris Thorburn than anybody.
Chris Thorburn than Chris Thorburn.
Well, I think Chris Thorburn does so many good things. He's a great leader in the dressing room, and he does a very hard job. I think he gets criticized sometimes because he doesn't have a lot of points, but I don't think they're expecting Chris Thorburn to score 50 points a year.
No, and you know what? The fact of the matter is you can't. There are certain intangibles that stats won't tell. Like the qualities of leadership that guys bring to the room. I mean, that is important to keep a team loose because, you know, the fact of the matter is when a team's losing and they're tight, and, you know, that's when you have a tendency to have real breakdowns. And if you have someone who's able to bring those sort of off-ice intangibles, it's important. Now, is that important enough to hold a spot for someone who could better serve it? No, obviously not. But when he's been asked to do certain things by Coach Noel, he's done them. So, you know, I think that Thorburn, Jokinen, and Setoguchi to me has been the biggest disappointment. I mean, you know, if many Jets fans have to be wondering, was he worth the draft pick the Jets gave up to get him, to acquire him? Because really, he hasn't done much. He's throwing the body around a little bit. Like, if we watched some of the games, he's hitting a little bit. He's played the point a little bit on the power play. But, like, for the most part, he's been pretty disappointing. So, and Jokinen, he's picked his game up. He's slowed down of late a little bit. But where could you go from your game from last year? It was terrible. So he had to improve. I think he has improved. I would give them a C+, so I'm going to copy Ezzy again. And going into the fourth line, I mean, the fourth line has been extremely disappointing. If you want to label it as Tangrady, Wright, and Peluso, they're all...
They're just not playing, Dave.
You know what?
I mean, they're playing 5 or 7 minutes a game. That's not enough.
At most, they barely play.
I mean,
it's a three-line team.
And the truth is, Ezzy has pointed out, and he's not wrong, in that Claude Noel loves James Wright and will use him in penalty kill situations, loves his speed. I mean, he's played every game this season, so you can see that there's a trust factor with Wright. He hasn't been a scratch, whereas the other guys have.
Wright's grade? Maybe Wright gets his own grade, because the line, it's tough to evaluate the line. Maybe Wright gets a grade?
I think everybody looks at Wright and doesn't see any goals. We were talking about this off air. He plays every game. I mean, Claude Noel loves James Wright,
and the penalty killing thing is a very telling stat.
Yesterday, he made a great play on the penalty kill against the Wild, and it's just little things that he does. And he's a physical player. He gets into the dirty areas. I really like James Wright, and I think that people say, oh, you know, why does he get all this ice time? He doesn't have any goals. Well, unfortunately, he hasn't been getting the bounces. The puck has not been going in the net, but he still has the trust of the coach, and he's a good defensive two-way guy. So, I mean, I'm still going to give James Wright a B for the way he plays. And the fourth line, as far as Peluso, Tangrady, I mean, as far as the line goes, I'll probably give them something like a C, just because there's been so many different guys. They really, let's be honest, guys, they miss Jim Slater. The Jim Slater injury that's your fourth line center. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he's out with that long-term injury. But it's just been a big mess, unfortunately.
Guys, quickly, overall grades to the forward core for the Winnipeg Jets. Overall, Dave?
I'm going to give them a C.
Ezra?
I'm going to give them a B. If you look at the Jets, they're still scoring a fair amount of goals. I think they're 18th in the NHL. It's not as bad as people think. And, you know, I think that the top line has been excellent. They're getting secondary offense from the Kane-Scheifele-Frolik line. And I think you've seen some decent things from the third line. Fourth line doesn't play much. I'll give him a B. Dave's being a little bit harder here.
Well,
that might be because his mom's a teacher. My dad was a professor. His mom's a teacher. Maybe, I don't know. But I got bad grades right sometimes, so I'm going to give a little higher grades all the time.
I think I'm going based on the sum total of the season as opposed to, you know, because like we said, that line has been together for a shorter period of time.
Yes.
So if you're looking at the whole season, the whole first half of the season, I would give them a C. I mean, of late, maybe I would go. I'd be more inclined to go higher. But for right now,
would we all agree? October, November, versus December, there is definitely a shift in the forward group for this team.
100%.
And you know,
we'll get a clearer picture by the end of the season.
And Maddie, what they say, you know, C's get degrees, so, you know, it's not that bad.
But do they make the playoffs?
No, but I'm going to go B, though. I think Dave's being a little hard here. I think Dave wants more goals all the time.
Later on in the show, we'll do report cards mid-season for the defensemen, and then we'll do a segment where we do report cards for special teams, goalies, and the coaches. That's still to come on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Up next, we'll talk a little Toronto Maple Leafs, who had a thrilling shootout win last night over the Buffalo Sabres. I don't think they wanted it to be thrilling. I don't think they wanted it that close. Our colleague from TSN 1050, Jonas Siegel, will join us. That's what we will do to kick off hour number two. Matt Leibel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. We're going until 4 o'clock this afternoon. A little holiday line shuffling. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk in today. Matt Leibel with you here, your host for today's show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, check out rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors, spelt with only one U. I think that's a Canadian faux pas.
Yep. One U.
I blame Drew. Just wanted to let everyone know, it is just the weather in Winnipeg today, absolutely frightful. We're keeping you updated on the CTV News Skywatch weather throughout the show here. Lots of a wind chill warning in effect, blowing snow warning in effect, light snow falling. Trans-Canada Highway closed east and west out of the city. So if you are on the roads and you're thinking of going out of town, cancel your plans. And maybe if you're on the roads and you can avoid it, avoid it. And if you are stuck on the roads, just slow down and take your time because the driving conditions today are awful. We'll keep you company as you take a little extra time in your car. We're going to talk a little Maple Leafs, and for that, gentlemen, back to the hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Jonas Siegel, our colleague, covers the Maple Leafs for TSN 1050 in Toronto. Jonas, welcome to the program. Thanks for being on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just wanted to start you off with, have you been calling out Randy Carlyle lately at Swiss Chalet?
No, but I guess he had during the Christmas break. He was up in Parry Sound, and I guess some fan came up to him and essentially just told him to get this team going, and you can't escape it. You know, they hoped, you know, during that three-day break for Christmas that they could get away from the game, you know, try to reset mentally with everything that's going on. They've got the HBO cameras. They've got the Winter Classic. Just a lot of distractions, and I guess even Randy Carlyle, as far as Parry Sound from Toronto, couldn't escape the struggles that his team has been going through.
I guess there's always something cooking at Swiss Chalet, even if you're Randy Carlyle there, Jonas. Wanted to just start you off with this real first question, though. Last night, Leafs beat the Buffalo Sabres 4-3 in a shootout, a little bit of a tense game for Leafs fans. Do you think the Maple Leafs like shootouts or not?
They do not. I can tell you that for sure. And you know, even Randy Carlyle, he talked about that actually before the game. That was the fourth straight game that they've had go to a shootout. And actually, if you look over the past month, really, they've had six wins. Four of those wins have come in a shootout. So despite the fact that Randy Carlyle would prefer, you know, two-on-two, three-on-three, some type of overtime system that extends rather than going into the shootout, they've needed it. They've needed to get their, you know, those extra points in the shootout because, frankly, this team has not been very good. You know, they have one regulation victory in their last 19 games. They've been inconsistent. They've been unpredictable. And it's been frustrating for Randy Carlyle just because whenever it looks like they might get themselves on track, the next game, the next period, the next shift, you know, something goes wrong.
Now, Jonas, heading into this season, it wasn't really clear who would be the number one goalie, James Reimer, Jonathan Bernier. Jonathan Bernier was between the pipes yesterday and got the win. At the midway point of this season, heading into the stretch drive, is there any doubt that Jonathan Bernier is the number one goalie for the Leafs?
Oh, totally. He's not the number one goalie. He's one of two. You know, they don't have a number one. And I know it's a desire for the city and for people outside the organization, for them to have, you know, a defined number one, but they don't. You know, both guys have been just about equal. You know, there really hasn't been a stretch this year where one guy's really taken the load and run with it just because the other guy has been so good. You know, James Reimer has been equally as good as Jonathan Bernier. You've seen over the past couple games, you know, Bernier get a couple starts in a row, but that changes really quickly. You know, if they come out tomorrow night, lose the hockey game against Carolina, I wouldn't be surprised if James Reimer starts the Winter Classic. It's just been that solid between the pipes for both guys that Randy Carlyle really hasn't had to go with just the one.
So, Jonas, I guess the question would be, do you think there will be a trade in goal for but before the trade deadline?
I don't. You know, and obviously James Reimer's a restricted free agent after this season. So there's the idea that maybe they could trade him in the summer. But how do you trade James Reimer if you don't know what Jonathan Bernier is? You know, the whole question about Reimer for a while in this city was, could he be a number one guy? You know, and he hadn't played enough games really to define that for the organization. They didn't know. So how could they trade James Reimer now when Jonathan Bernier himself has never been a number one and has never been a number one this season? So, I mean, it's in theory it makes sense because they do have other needs. Their defense could use some help. But they don't know what Jonathan Bernier is yet. They don't know if he can be a number one. So I just don't see how they can trade James Reimer this season.
We're talking Toronto Maple Leafs with Jonas Siegel of TSN 1050 in Toronto. Jonas, Phil Kessel with a goal and assist last night. Tough to argue that he's not been the most consistent Leaf all season, but he has been criticized for being a one-dimensional player. How have you seen his game evolve this year?
I don't think he's been as good as I think I expected him to be. You know, he's just under a point per game, but he's not been, like the last couple of years, guys, he's been terrific. Last year, he was excellent. The year before that, he was top five in the league in scoring, if I'm not mistaken. And there was just this consistency to his game offensively that if he wasn't scoring goals, he was setting up his teammates. He was, you know, a force more often than not. And we really saw that, you know, kind of punctuate itself in the playoffs against Boston. He was terrific. He was a force against the Bruins. He made life difficult all throughout that series. But it's only been there in bits and starts this season. He just hasn't had that consistency. And part of that, his usual center, Tyler Bozak, has been out for most of the year. He's missed, I think, 25 games, 24 games. So there hasn't been that familiarity at center ice, but he just hasn't been the type of force I think they need him to be so far, and he's got to pick it up in the second half.
Jonas, you mentioned center ice, and that actually leads really nicely into my next question. I wanted to ask you about Nazem Kadri. He's been filling the number one line center role for the Leafs, and he struggled at times to live up to the numbers that he put together last season. He's got 11 goals, 12 assists in 36 games. I actually saw that you wrote about him in your Leaf report. Do you think that his regression has been overblown, and why do you think he's been struggling and been a little bit more streaky this year?
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think one, you know, when we looked at the numbers last year, there was a lot of good fortune on his side. Like when he was on the ice, guys, he had the number one shooting percentage of any player in the league, which essentially means that when he was on the ice, they were scoring more often than any player in the league. So he was putting up points at a furious pace, and obviously that's tailed back a little bit this year. And he's been facing more difficult competition this year. You know, last year they had the benefit of putting him against third and fourth lines and second and third defense pairings because they had Tyler Bozak in the number one center slot and they had Mikhail Grabowski in the number two hole. But now all of a sudden with Dave Boland out, with Tyler Bozak out, Kadri's not facing those guys. He's facing top defensive pairings. He's facing top checking lines. He's facing more difficult competition. So it's just been a little bit more challenging for him this year. He's still put up pretty good numbers so far, but not quite to the point per game potential he showed last season.
Jonas, Peter Holland has done an admirable job filling in as a center for the Leafs' second line and picked up a nice goal last night. Is the trade that sent Holland from the Ducks looking like a steal right now?
It does so far, you know, and that was the one thing about that trade is you looked at it from an outside lens and you tried to figure it out from the Anaheim perspective because Peter Holland, a first round pick, he's only 22. He hadn't done much consistently to, you know, show them that he could be part of, you know, their group consistently this year in Anaheim, but they've needed him in Toronto and he's been very good. You know, he's got 8 points in the last 10 games and he's given them some security, I guess you could say, with Boland and Bozak out. You know, he's provided some offense, and it just seems strange from the outside why you'd give up on a 22-year-old first-round pick who had shown glimmers, you know, of potential offensively, but obviously hadn't put it together. He's taken advantage of his opportunity, and now what's going to be interesting with Bozak coming back tomorrow is where he fits in the lineup. You know, today at practice, he was on the fourth line, you know, so it's a good decision for them to have a good buy-low opportunity, and so far it's worked out fine.
Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050 in Toronto, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking Maple Leafs. Jonas, looking back on it, was the decision to keep Morgan Rielly in the NHL and not let him go to the World Juniors, was that the right decision for the Leafs?
I don't know. I don't know if it's so much the World Juniors as it was junior hockey, you know, whether he was going to go back and play in Moose Jaw. To me, that was the bigger choice because, you know, obviously when you're keeping a 19-year-old in the NHL, you have to be sure that he's ready to play, you know, an 82-game season. And you have to be ready, more importantly, to determine if, you know, this is the best move for his long-term development. I mean, we saw last year in Buffalo what happened with Grigorenko. You know, they kept him, then they didn't play him, then they sent him back. And it was just a mess, you know, and that's the risk you take when you keep a 19-year-old defenseman in the NHL in Toronto. And he's gotten into the lineup more consistently, and I think that's what changed in the past month, you know, the past couple weeks, actually. There was a stretch of four or five games there, guys, where he wasn't playing. He was out of the lineup, and I talked to him today about it, and he actually thought he was going to the World Juniors. He was changing his plans at Christmas. He actually thought it was going to happen, you know, and then all of a sudden the organization made the decision that he needed to be in the NHL, that they thought that was the best option for him, that they needed him in their top six, and he's been in the lineup ever since, and he shows glimpses of what he can be. So I just think it's more of an overarching question as to whether it's best to keep a 19-year-old in the NHL long term, not so much just the World Junior situation.
Jonas, this current group of defensemen here, you've got Dion Phaneuf obviously leading the group in Gunnarsson, and you've got Cody Franz and Jake Gardner's playing more. You've had Paul Ranger, who's struggled at times. Mark Fraser was struggling at times. Is this current group of defensemen good enough to get the Leafs into the playoffs and really be and beyond, or does general manager Dave Nonis have to address this now?
Well, I thought it was something that they probably should have addressed in the summer, but you know, the options at free agency weren't great, and obviously they couldn't pull something in via trade. Doesn't need to be addressed. Yeah, you know, it's been the sore spot of this team all year. You know, beyond the top pair of Gunnarsson and Phaneuf, it's just been inconsistent. You know, Jake Gardner has shown glimpses of the type of defenseman they think he can be. Cody Franzen has done the same. You know, Paul Ranger, Mark Fraser, both those guys, like you mentioned, have struggled. Morgan Rielly's 19. It's not been great, you know, and it's been, I think, a frustrating point for the organization just because they haven't really gotten much consistency. Now, can they go out there and acquire someone to help? I don't know. You know, the cap situation really makes it difficult with Dave Bolin on long-term IR. They're hugging up against the cap right now, you know, and so it's not that simple just to go out and say trade for a top four defenseman because you might not be able to fit him under your roster, you know, and under your cap. And so I'm sure they'd like to upgrade their defense. I'm just not sure it's so easy to do it.
Jonas, the final question here is what's the latest on the Dion Phaneuf contract negotiations?
Well, from the sounds of it, and from Darren Dreger, obviously, has been reporting on this consistently, it sounds like it's going to get done pretty soon, and he's reported, you know, 7 years at $7 million, and that's going to be interesting. You know, I know a lot of people in this city are really divided about Dion Phaneuf, and I guess he's a dividing force throughout the NHL, but to me, it's simple. They don't really have much choice in the matter. They have to sign Dion Phaneuf. They just don't have anyone who could step into the kind of role that he fills for this team, the kind of minutes that he plays, or the kind of competition he plays against. And with the current group that they have, you know, trying to eventually get to Stanley Cup contending status, they just can't afford to let him go because there's just not many options out there, whether it's free agency, whether it's in trade, who could replace the kind of production that he gives this team.
Jonas Siegel, TSN 1050, our TSN radio brother from Toronto. Jonas, you're the man. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on
my
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You got
okay,
it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jonas.
We'll look forward to the next time. Always great Maple Leafs insight from Jonas Siegel.
Jonas, we've had a couple chances to meet Jonas in Winnipeg at the draft. Really good guy, and we appreciate every time he comes on.
He always finds a way to sneak into the TV shot, too, in some of the scrums in the locker room, which I appreciate. That's a very savvy move.
He's a handsome guy. So.
He really is.
Yeah.
And he's one of our Shabbos brethren.
Yeah.
As it's part of the Hebrew Hockey Hour.
That's, yeah. There you go.
As
that's
Gary
right.
likes to call it, the Hebrew Hockey Hour.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. We'll talk about the irony of that being on Saturday some other time. When we come back, more hockey talk, more Jets talk, more midseason report cards, and we'll talk with Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com later this hour to preview tomorrow's Jets game in Colorado. Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, Matt Leibel with you. It is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Check out the website too, illegalcurve.com. Ezra, Dave, and Matt with you today. A little bit of holiday line shuffling here at IC. We're live until 4 o'clock. Big thanks to Jonas Siegel of TSN 1050, our guest in the last segment, talking Toronto Maple Leafs. If you missed any or all of that interview or any part of the show we've had so far, check out the podcast. We'll upload it later this afternoon. IllegalCurve.com is where you'll want to go. Jets are on their way to Denver. Tomorrow night, they will play at the Colorado Avalanche. And to preview that game and talk a little bit about the Jets' opponent, we're going to check in on the hotline, fellas.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
I believe it's our first time welcoming Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome, Drew. We hope it's the first of many. How's your Saturday going so far?
Hey, Saturday's going great, guys. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Let's start with last night. A little bit of a lopsided loss for the Avs in Chicago. 7-2, they fell to the Blackhawks. What's the deal, Drew?
Well, you know, guys, I mean, it's hard to say what it was for sure. I mean, I think, you know, the holiday break kind of affected this team a little bit. They did not come out with any sort of energy at all last night. I mean, they were flat from the very get-go. You had, you know, Chicago defensemen jumping up into the play early and often against the Avalanche. So they really struggled defensively last night, and they could never get anything going. And, you know, I mean, we've seen this from Chicago before. I mean, Chicago kind of goes out and does whatever they want against a lot of different teams. So I don't think it's anything that, you know, Avalanche fans or, you know, anybody should be worried about or panicking about, but it was definitely a little bit alarming seeing how flat they came out last night, having not played or practiced since Monday night.
Drew, you wrote about this for ESPN Denver. The Colorado power play has been red hot lately after going through a big drought there. What or who is responsible for this turnaround on the power play?
You know, I think a lot of it's been, from the defensive side of it, is Eric Johnson. Eric Johnson has really turned his game up the past month or two. He's been really, really good, specifically on the power play. He's moving the puck well. He's getting scoring chances on the power play. I mean, he's the guy that's kind of quarterbacking that thing and really setting things up for the rest of those guys. And, you know, a guy like Matt Duchene, he's come in and he's done really well since returning from his injury a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, it's been a combination of those two things. But, you know, as well as this power play has performed, they still aren't, I think, scoring at the level that head coach Patrick Waugh would like to see them score at. I mean, they went on that 0-31 drought, like you said, and then they come back and they had a couple power play goals here and there, but it hasn't been as consistent as head coach Patrick Waugh would like.
Drew, in your opinion, has Matt Duchene played his way onto Team Canada's roster for the 2014 Sochi Winter Olympics?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt at this point. I mean, he has been absolutely spectacular this year. He's turned himself truly into one of the superstars, one of the up-and-coming superstars in the NHL. I mean, going into the season, I think there was a little bit of doubt as to whether or not he'd have any chance to get on the roster. But, yeah, I mean, the way he's played, especially returning from his injury, he's been fantastic. And the best part about watching Duchene's development is the fact that he's improved his game in all three zones. I mean, he's been great defensively. He's been great, obviously, in the offensive zone. He's doing a lot of great things for this team, and I think there's no doubt that he's going to be on that Team Canada roster.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com. Jets in Denver tomorrow to play the Avalanche. Speaking of injuries, Drew, what's the latest update on Alex Tanguy?
You know, honestly, we still don't know. The last we heard is that he was expected to return to the lineup at some point this year. You know, it's kind of up in the air. We're kind of left, you know, in the blue or in the dark about this injury. It's really hurting this team, truthfully. Tanguy was a guy that, you know, was expected to come in and be a nice second-line guy playing with Landeskog and Stastny. But, you know, that line specifically has really struggled since Tanguay went out. So hopefully for the Avalanche's sake, they can get Tanguay back in that line, because he's a guy that, you know, he's a great passer. He creates opportunities for other guys on lines with him. So he's a guy they desperately need back. But right now, guys, we don't know when he's going to be returning. Hopefully it's within the next month or two.
Drew, we have to ask you about Nathan MacKinnon. The World Juniors are going on right now. Of course, he used to play for Team Canada at the World Junior Tournament 2013, first-round pick. And we're at the midway point of the season, and I think it's appropriate that we get your assessment of Nathan MacKinnon. He's got 8 goals and 13 assists in 37 games. How would you rate his play so far? How have you seen his game evolve over the first 40 games of the year?
You know, I think overall it's been a little bit inconsistent. He's had times where he's played really well. There's also been times where, you know, he looks like he's not quite confident. The big thing, I think, with MacKinnon right now is he's playing out of position. You know, he started the season playing as a third-line center, and once Tanguay went down with an injury and a couple other things happened, you know, the Steve Downey trade went down, you know, they had to move MacKinnon up to a different line. So he's been playing on the right side on the line with Matthew Shane and Ryan O'Reilly. So he's playing a little bit out of position, but there's no doubt that this kid has all the tools to be a very special player in this league. I mean, he's got unbelievable speed. He's got great hands. I think right now it's just a thing where he's lacking a little bit of confidence. But, you know, playing with guys Matthew Shane and Ryan O'Reilly, I think is only going to help his development a little bit more. But, you know, so far I think, you know, if I had to give him a grade, I'd probably put him at a C-plus or B-minus. But not bad so far for MacKinnon.
Paul Stastny is a pending unrestricted free agent. Do you think the Avalanche will re-sign Stastny or trade him?
You know, that's the big question. I mean, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to talking about MacKinnon because, you know, the Avalanche have a lot of centers. I mean, you've got Ryan O'Reilly, who's the natural center, playing on the left side with Duchesne. You've got MacKinnon, who's the center, playing on the right side. So you've got a lot of centers on this roster. And make no mistake, I mean, Paul Stastny, he's making a lot of money. He's making a little bit over $6.5 million. He's a restricted free or unrestricted free agent next season. I don't see him coming back to Colorado. I think ideally they would like to trade him because this team still has holes in it. They need to get themselves another top-scoring winger, preferably on the right side. They probably need to go out and get another defenseman or so. So if the market's there and they can find a way to move Paul Stastny, I think that would be the ideal situation. But right now we just don't know what's going to happen with him.
Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com. He is our guest right here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. In your opinion, Drew, what is the Avalanche's biggest weakness right now?
Right now, if I had to say the biggest weakness, I think it's probably been the penalty kill. They've really struggled on that, especially here recently. I think that's a big issue. You know, I mean, I think this team is a little bit undersized. When they go up against bigger, more physical teams like St. Louis, like L.A., they tend to struggle. They don't have that guy that can get in front of the net and bang bodies in there and you know, set screens for shot opportunities and stuff like that. So I think this team needs to get a little bit bigger, especially up front. That's become a big-time weakness for them because, you know, you see a lot of their goals tend to come from, you know, kind of near their face-off dots and they come from the outside a little bit. They don't have that big banger up front. So I think size and physicality is the thing that this team really, really struggles with.
Drew, the Colorado Avalanche got off to that hot start, and they were at the top of the Central Division, but as of late, they're struggling. They've only won 3 of their last 10 games. As far as Patrick Waugh goes, I think it's almost we forget the fact that this is his first year as a head coach in the National Hockey League. How have you seen Patrick Waugh evolve as a head coach? And again, it's only been, the Avalanche have actually only played 37 games, I should mention, the least amount in the Western Conference. How have you seen him change, adapt, grow as a coach, even though it's only been half of a season around?
You know, so far I think he's done a really good job of that. I mean, he hasn't, you know, I think a lot of people's expectations of Patrick Waugh coming in were that he's going to be kind of an explosive, fiery guy on the sideline or, you know, behind the bench there, and that, you know, he was going to be a guy that was going to be just kind of a head case. But he hasn't been that at all. He's been very controlled, very, very hands-on with his team. It's fun watching him in practice because he's one of those coaches that, you know, he lets his assistant coach his team, but he's very hands-on as the fact that he talks to his guys through things. He doesn't, you know, overreact a lot. He's done very good. His in-game adjustments, I'm not sure we've seen yet, how he does with that. But, you know, he doesn't juggle his lines very often, which is something that, you know, I think is a little bit odd. But, you know, so far I think he's done a really nice job.
How much attention are the Avalanche getting in the Denver market with all the hoopla surrounding Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, I got to be honest, guys, not a lot. Right now it's all Broncos all the time. And anybody that's familiar with Denver at all knows that this is a Denver Broncos city no matter what. You know, right now the Broncos in the playoff mix, they're, you know, playing for the number one seed. So the attention has been lacking a little bit. And, you know, the attendance, fortunately, for the Avalanche has been up this year. Last year they really, really struggled, obviously, being one of the worst teams, not only in the Western Conference, but in the league. But the attendance has been pretty good this year, especially when you get, you know, a weekend game or a big team that's coming into town. So it's been good. But overall, the attention, I mean, it's lacked a little bit. It's lacked a lot, truthfully. But, you know, that I think is set to change once the Broncos wrap up their season, hopefully with a Super Bowl championship. But once that season comes to an end, I think the Avalanche will get a lot more attention right here. But people are excited. People are paying attention more to this team this year, but it's not getting the kind of attention I think that it would in other markets that the NFL is not as popular.
Drew Spivak, ESPNDenver.com. His beat is the Colorado Avalanche. The Winnipeg Jets play the Avs tomorrow night in Denver. All right, Drew, we're going to put you on the spot here with your final question, a two-parter. Will the Avalanche hang on to a playoff spot in the West, and could they surprise someone in the first round?
Well, to answer the first part of it, I think they will make the playoffs. Right now they're going into a big-time homestand. They got a seven-game homestand where they're playing only two teams that are currently sitting in a playoff position right now. So this is a big-time homestand for this team. Now, you know, you look at the standings in the Central Division right now, they're sitting in third place. They're 4 points behind St. Louis for second, 4 points ahead of Minnesota for the fourth spot in that division. So I think that they will make the playoffs. Now, whether or not they can surprise somebody, I think it all depends on the matchup. Right now, you're probably looking at them taking on St. Louis in that first round, and honestly, they don't match up well with St. Louis at all. If they end up having to play St. Louis, you know, or a team like L.A., Anaheim, San Jose, they might struggle. I think, honestly, and it sounds really weird to say this, but I think their best matchup might be going against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Wow, it's tough to imagine them getting beat in the first round. Drew, we actually have one more question for you while we have you on the line. The Jets, as we mentioned, play the Avalanche tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Do we know who the starting goalie is going to be for the Colorado Avalanche, and are there any lineup changes that you're aware of for tomorrow night?
Right now, I would anticipate it's going to be Semyon Varlamov. It's going to be in net tomorrow night. Jagr got the start last night. He played the first two periods despite giving up all seven of the goals against the Hawks. But I would anticipate it'll be Varlamov back in net. As far as any lineup changes, we're not sure. Now, Ryan Wilson did return to the starting lineup last night after missing 22 games with his injury. Corey Sarge was the man who was scratched last night. We don't know yet whether or not he's going to return to the lineup. But, you know, Patrick Waugh's got some interesting decisions to make now that Wilson is healthy. You know, whether or not you scratch Sarge, you give him a couple nights off, you scratch a guy like Nate Gannon or the young Tyson Berry. So it's going to be interesting to see. But right now we don't know if there's been any lineup changes. I wasn't able to attend their morning skate today, so I'm not totally sure on that yet. But I don't anticipate anything changing.
Drew, I know firsthand what it's like to be a first-timer on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and I think I can say you did pretty well. So thanks for taking the time. We look to have you back again for more Avalanche Insight as the season goes on and the rivalry continues.
Sounds great, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Yep. Thanks for coming on, Drew.
Anytime, Drew. Drew Spivak, ESPNDenver.com. He covers the Avalanche, and as we've mentioned, the Jets are playing the Avalanche tomorrow. When we come back, we will continue our mid-season report card for the Winnipeg Jets. Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk are in for IC. I'm Matt Leibel, your host for the rest of the day. We're going to 4 o'clock live right here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Do you guys know the song that was sampled for this hook? This is MIA, right?
Paper Planes? Yeah.
But it's actually a song by The Clash.
Oh, this is The Clash.
Well, no, like this sample, this groove, this.
But this is The Clash. Like, this is
this
original.
This is The Clash. I think this might be the original.
No.
Oh,
Timmy loves me.
I thought it was Paper Planes, but Timmy's
play some
one step
music
ahead of me. He's in my brain.
Yeah.
I'm going to start charging you rent, Tim Debenham, if you're going to keep taking up space in my brain. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province, gentlemen. CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of 72 large for new graduates. CGA-Manitoba.org, the CGA Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Big thanks to Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com. He was our guest in the last segment talking about the Colorado Avalanche, whom the Jets play tomorrow in Denver. Drew's debut as a guest here with IC. If you missed it, check out the podcast later today on our website, illegalcurve.com. All right, Ezra Ginsberg in the house. Drew Manuk. Dave Manuk. Whoa.
We got to be careful there.
That was a Freudian slip. Ezra Ginsberg, yep. Dave Manuk from IC. I'm Matt Leibel filling in for Drew Mandel as your host today, IC. TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
I gotta give a shout out on Twitter here because
we're gonna continue with our midseason report card for the Jets in just a second. But
we got a funny little tweet from our good friend, who people know on Twitter as at JetsXOXO. It's of course our friend Constantine. He wanted to give a legal curve a mid-year report, and unfortunately he didn't have Leibel on here. But we assume that Leibel gets an A+. So he gives
he gives
myself an A++.
Ooh.
Dave gets an A+, and then in parenthesis, more radio, which I agree. Remus gets an A+, so Constantine, Jets XOXO, is just giving out the A+.
Not a high, hard grader.
Drew gets a B, in parenthesis, unfollowed me. And Rich gets an A+, as well, get back on Twitter. So I think it's fitting that the only person that didn't get an A+, is Rue, which I would tend to agree with.
Looks like you guys got a lot of XOXO from Constantine right there.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of love. Speaking of midseason report cards, earlier in the show we did the forwards. We went line by line for the Jets, even though that's kind of a tough proposition. But we think that the lines have really kind of started to take shape, at least over the last month. And as everything is part of the show, interviews and our breakdowns, that's all part of the podcast that you can check out later. Let's move to the defensemen, gentlemen. And I assume you guys want to go pairing by pairing here. Again, it's kind of a tough proposition. You basically have two defensemen who haven't been really injured at all this year, right? And Dustin Byfuglien and Toby Enstrom. We could talk about them. Then you've got Jacob Trouba, who missed, of course, 17 games between the middle of October and towards the end of November. Zach Bogosian's basically missed the entire first half. he played through all of October and he got hurt middle of November, I think November 15th. So those are your big four, with some obviously issues with Bogosian and Trouba in terms of evaluating a full half season. And then, of course, Mark Stewart. And then you've had guys like Keaton Ellerbe, Adam Party in and out of the lineup. So you almost have like three tiers of defensemen here. How do you want to go about this, Ezra? Where do you want to start? I turn it over to you.
Well, I think we could start with going through the pairs. And I think, as you mentioned, there have been some big-time injuries on this blue line. And unfortunately, the Winnipeg Jets don't have the depth at the AHL level to really deal with it. And every team does deal with injuries, but the story really has been those injuries this year. And Zach Bogosian and Jacob Trouba, the two young future leaders of this D-Corps, have been injured. And Jacob Trouba was excellent before he went down, and I think he's been excellent since he has been returned. But if we're going to, we might as well go through the top three pairs and assume that either Dustin Byfuglien or Tobias Enstrom have been on one of those top pairs, either with each other or with Zach Bogosian or Jacob Trouba at times. But if you look at what the pairs were last night, and again, I thought that, you know, Dustin Byfuglien paired up with Keaton Ellerbe worked. I know Keaton Ellerbe had a giveaway in the first period, guys, that led to a goal. But I really do think that worked as a pairing. And to me, the problem with the Jets right now, and this hasn't changed, guys, since the offseason, is that they really lack a second pairing left-shooting shutdown defenseman. And what you've had is you've had Grant Klitsam, Adam Party, Mark Stewart, different guys try to fill that role. And I actually like the pairing of Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to that pairing tomorrow against the Colorado Avalanche, a team that can score a lot of goals, guys. So if we're starting off with the first pairing, I think they've struggled big time this year. And the Jets have tied for the second most goals against in the Western Conference. This has been the big sore spot of this team this year. The goaltending has been average at times, but it really hasn't been the main Achilles heel of this team, in my opinion. It is the defense. On last week's Illegal Curve show, Richie was here along with Dave, and we talked about Dustin Byfuglien's minutes, and I think he has been playing too much this year, and his plus-minus has suffered. Jesse, the intern, mentioned that on last week's show, He has one of the worst plus minuses in the NHL. For a guy who's that good offensively, that something has to give there, guys. So I think, you know, and I'm not saying that Dustin Byfuglien hasn't been a contributor to this team, because I actually think he has been the MVP of this team when you look at what he's done as far as offensive contribution. So, again, I think as far as the first pairing is gone, I think there is issues here. And I think Dustin Byfuglien and Tobias Enstrom, there are too many things that they give up as far as size with Enstrom and Byfuglien with the speed and the endurance, that's not something that you can have moving forward. Again, that's why I think Enstrom and Trouba, when they've played together, pardon me, Enstrom and Bogosian, so many defensemen going through my mind right now, Enstrom and Bogosian has to be your top pair. Bogosian's a shutdown guy, and Enstrom is a guy that has the offensive abilities, but he struggles with bigger forwards. That's why you have Bogosian for those matchups. So I'm looking at the defense, and there have been, you can look at individual players, and I think that, you know, a guy like Adam Pardy, who was signed, and then he was put on waivers, and then he came back, you know, he's done an admirable job, but he can't fill that role. And I look at the pairings, and I say Keaton Ellerbe has to be paired up with Dustin Byfuglien there, because he's more of a stay-at-home type. As we know, Maddie, Byfuglien likes to freelance. He likes to carry the puck up the ice, so that's why you pair him up with Ellerbe. And I think then with your third pairing, Stewart and Trouba. And now, I mean, you look at the pairings, and when they're healthy, I think those are the pairings. And then Klitsam and Adam Pardy are your extra guys. And again, Klitsam's injured right now, unfortunately, placed on injured reserve, but he struggled this year. Grant Klitsam, guys, you can't forget, has never been a top four defenseman for any length of period of time in the NHL. He's more suited to a third pairing role where he's playing 12 to 15 minutes, and I think he struggled with that role, and I would put Keaton Ellerbe there. So I'm going to give the Jets D a C on the year, but I think if they're healthy, and again, what if you could live in this world of what ifs, could have, all that. But I think that has been the sore spot. And, you know, I'm not putting this all on one guy. I'm not putting this all on Byfuglien. I'm not putting this all on Enstrom. I just think as a group, they've struggled to find the right mix and play solid. And I think a lot of that has been turnovers in their own zone. We saw that yesterday with Ellerbe. We've seen that with Buff having mental lapses throughout the year. And I think when you have Stewart and Bogo back in the lineup like you do tomorrow, that'll improve. But I think I can't give them a higher grade than C, because I just don't think they've showed a high enough commitment to defense, and they've been cohesive enough and effective enough in their own zone.
You know what? It's interesting that and further to your point about making mental mistakes, I mean, on that first goal, Buff was kind of waving at the puck, and it when, you know, the Wild player went right past him and then ended up scoring the first goal against the Jets. You know what? The mix has been interesting, the way Coach Noel has tried to kind of mix a guy who's going to be a stay-at-home with a guy who might freelance a little bit more. You know, but the problem is that someone like Pardy just doesn't have the foot speed to be that backup guy. But you know what? I'm with Ezzy. I thought Ellerbe was a nice mix with Buff. I thought he brought in kind of that stay-at-home defense that you need. But he's fast. I mean, we saw it in the Jets, skills competition. He has foot speed. He can actually catch up to the play if need be. So, I mean, and he makes mistakes. I mean, he's a younger player. He sat for a number of games. That weighs on you. You know what I mean? So you're sitting there and you're trying to get back in the lineup. You don't want to make mistakes. Sometimes you hold your stick a little too tight, and that kind of forces things. And so Ellerbe did make a mistake on, the third goal by Minnesota yesterday. But I think he's been pretty solid. He's done what he's been asked to do. You know, I like the way Coach Noel has brought Trouba up. I think that he's played him smartly. He really has. He really has put him in a role to succeed. And he's given him responsibility. He's given him power play time. He's given him penalty kill time. He's put him with Stewart, who we know is a banger and a crasher, isn't going to try and do anything flashy. And so, you know, I don't mind that pairing. And then you have Enstrom and Bogosian, and those two guys together kind of offset each other. And we've spoken with Tobias Enstrom when the pairing kind of was brought together, and he said he feels comfortable playing with Zach Bogosian. He's played with him a number of games throughout his career already, so it's not they're familiar already. So there's already that sort of bond those two have, kind of a knowing where the other guy will be. So the Jets' defense has been, as Ezzy says, they've had a lot of goals against. They have been a lot of mental lapses. They haven't been a cohesive unit. I mean, look at the injuries, and that's, you know, and you can, and every team has injuries, but as a whole, this team has suffered some major lapses. When you lose Zach Bogosian, you can't discount that because he is a stud. He might not get the offensive – he might not have his offensive game honed to the where it needs to be yet, but defensively, he's still very strong. He's a brute. I mean, he really is the guy who you're going to use to clear the front of the net in front of Andre Pavlik or Al Montoya. So that his loss really can't be understated, I think. If I had to give them a grade, I'd probably give them a C+. I think that, you know, their offensive game is very good. You know, Buff is lights out. I think Buff right now is fourth amongst NHL defensemen in points. Enstrom's kind of getting his game turned around in terms of point production. Ironically enough, I don't remember what it was. He had gone like six or seven games without a goal, and the media was asking him. They said, you know, is it kind of bothering you? And he was saying, I think it was the day before the game, and he said, no, it doesn't bother me. You know, I'm just playing my game. And then he goes out that game and he scores a goal. So it's interesting how that kind of turned around for him. So I like the offense that the Jets defense has provided. And again, has their defense been as good as it could be? No, but I think once they're healthy, we'll see what this group can really do, and then we can judge them better. So I'm going to give them a C+.
Much like with the forwards, the last month has been very different from the first 2 months because of the injuries and just the incomplete nature of this defense. So the grades that we give, we're expecting there to be improvement. Just like you said, Dave, they need to be more cohesive. They need to play together, all together, for a while for us to really be able to evaluate these guys as.
Right, and I think you've heard about this, and for people that listen to this station and watch the Jets on TSN Jets, I apologize, but the only word that you can use is inconsistency. And Claude Noel uses that, and it's frustrating because you say, oh, you know, Claude Noel is going to talk about inconsistency again. Well, you look at that road trip, and I really go back to that road trip, and I do think that that was probably the best part of the year. They went on the road trip. They won 4 of 6 games when they went through New York and the Eastern U.S. teams. And they showed that they had a high commitment to defense. I look at that Rangers game. I believe it was 5-2 that they won that game towards the end of that road trip. And they showed that they can play well together if everyone knows their role. And a guy like Adam Pardy, sure, he might not be a top pairing guy or a top four defenseman, but if he's playing a bottom pairing role, he can fill in and play 10 minutes a game. So I think that, you know, these guys, there have been just so many ups and downs, more downs than ups. And I think that, you know, this still is a decent NHL decor. I think that, you know, we just have to see more healthy bodies in the lineup. Again, I thought Julian Melchiori in his first NHL game did a pretty good job. I didn't think that he made any, you know, big lapses in judgment. And, you know, he didn't play that much. But again, I thought in his first game back up from St. John's, he was good. So, you know, you don't want to be too hard on these guys because, you know, as we know, hockey's a team game, and when you're losing, it's not just the D or the forwards or this or that. It's the entire team. It all goes together. So I think, you know, again, I gave them a C, but I think that there's definitely a higher grade in this group.
When we come back, more midseason report cards for the Jets. We'll talk goalies, coaches, and special teams. I doubt that you guys are going to be too flattering with some of your report cards that you hand out there. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk from Illegal Curve, and Matt Leibel, your guest host for today. That's still to come on Illegal Curve, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.